versus U.S. Steel, Mr. DiNardo.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Larry DiNardo, and I represent the defendant appellant, U.S. Steel, in this 1292B appeal from a district court grant in part and denial in part of summary judgment. The plaintiffs are current and former U.S. Steel employees at Geary Works who claim that they should have been paid overtime compensation for time they spent putting their work clothes on, taking their work clothes off, washing up at the end of their day, and walking from their lockers to where they perform their principal duties. The U.S. Steel complex stretches over 20 miles. There's literally hundreds of buildings, numerous locker facilities.
They don't walk 20 miles to work.
Oh no. There are a variety of parking lots, a variety of locker rooms, a variety of entrances. Some walk, some ride in shuttle buses, some walk very few feet, but others take some time. District court held that the change of clothes and the washing was excluded from compensable time or from the workday by virtue of Section 2030 of the Fair Labor Standards Act.
I can't understand what possible benefit your position could have for the workers, not for these guys. This for them, this would be a tremendous windfall. But going forward, looking forward, if these guys work in fact 35 hours a week doing productive work for U.S. Steel, the rest of the time they're walking and changing clothes and so on, U.S. Steel is not going to pay them for 40 hours a week work. They're only working 35 hours.
Well, for many, many years, under the labor agreement, the employees are at their workstations for 40 hours. They're paid 40 hours. That's been an agreement that goes back with the steel workers to the 30s. And you're expected to be at your workstation with your work clothes on, ready to go to work at the start of your shift. So why does a union and an employer enter into such an agreement, and many employers do, so that the employees can get to the locker room when they want to, can put their clothes on when they want to, can get to their workstations in a sense in the manner in which they want to. Some walking directly there 5 minutes after they arrived on the property, others stopping and having a cup of coffee, talking to their friends. But what you must do under the labor contract is present yourself for productive work at your workstation at the start of your shift. So there's a certain level of freedom for certain built into this sort of workplace. It's a rather common situation. Now, 2030 requires that the union and the employer, however, agree in advance that the clothing, the clothes changing and the wash up will be excluded from compensable time. Otherwise, there can be the argument that this is a principal activity, I have to be paid for it. But the law does allow quite explicitly for a union and an employer to enter into such an agreement.
Which they have in this case.
Which they have, Your Honor, in this case.
There's another thing as far as, I don't know what you call it when you check in. I assume it's a security check when they arrive at the gate. It's a gate check, and there's something in here that says they have to arrive ahead of time in order to even possibly arrive at the workstation. I don't quite understand that.
A couple of points. It's a security check, not a time clock. Right. So you have to swipe in. Some employees are able to drive through the gate. Others have to park outside their gate, walk through. But in any event, you have to swipe a card. It's a security matter, not a time card. Then, as a practical matter, of course, you must arrive at the premises, some minutes before you work, although there's evidence in the record that some of the workstations are quite close to the locker room. Some of the locker rooms are quite close to the employee parking lot. So I would suggest that in some cases, 3 or 4 minutes before you're due at your workstation, you could get there. Other folks have greater distances to travel. And again, the contract requires that they be at their workstation for their 8-hour shift. So in those cases, as a practical matter, those folks are going to have to arrive, get out of their car some minutes in advance. And again, the district court found there was the required agreement under 2030. These items are closed. The items were submitted to the court. So the court in the record has the jacket. It looks like a work jacket that you'd wear on a weekend at your home doing work outside. Work pants, again, looks like a pair of pants. Work boots, a hard hat, a hood. It's really kind of they call it a snood. It covers your neck. And then wristlets for some employees and gloves. It was all submitted to the court. It looks like clothes. Everybody would call it clothes. This court in the Kraft case adopted the Fourth Circuit's view of the world that just because these items have some protective quality doesn't mean they're not clothing or clothes. The statute uses the word clothes.
Is there anything? So there's the helmet and there's the schnud and the pants and so on. Is there anything, you know, attached to that? Like if you looked at a policeman's uniform, you'd say there's the uniform and there's the bulletproof vest, probably by the uniform. But then, you know, it's carrying a gun and a radio and a this and a that.
For the most part, Your Honor, no. There's a few jobs in the facility, principally the coke ovens, where some of the employees are right on top of the ovens where the coal is turned into coke. They have to wear respirators when they're on those ovens. They carry those, so they put their jacket on, they put their pants on, they leave their locker room, they get to the coke batteries. They either have carried with them or they grab when they get to the battery a respirator. Has to be worn when they're on top of the ovens. For the most part, no.
They're not putting on the respirator when they're getting dressed. Is that what you're saying?
Correct, Your Honor. They're not required to wear it. It's uncomfortable to wear it. You'd only wear it when you're at your workstation. There's also some workers where steel and iron is actually made, where the furnaces are. And there's additional equipment, if you will, that they have to put on when they're in the furnace. They have to put on aluminized jackets, et cetera. Those are not the items involved in the litigation or submitted to the court in chambers.
They would be wearing something extraordinary, I suppose.
I'm sorry,
Your Honor?
People
in the most hazardous place would be wearing something more, I would
say. On top of the work clothes, absolutely.
It seems to me that, I don't want to use a cliche, one size doesn't fit all. And it would seem that there is enough variety here where they would have to distinguish what the workstation is like and what, your opponent puts in a lot of detail on some of them about what could be. And as I understand, this is supposed to impact the whole country that is under the union, United Steelworkers.
Yes, there's a single labor agreement, covers 6 or 7 mills across the United States. All of these 8 plaintiffs are Gary Works employees. The court never got to the question of whether these folks are similarly situated even to the other people at this plant. So in terms of whose claims are at issue here, it's the 8. But obviously it impacts the nation and all of the locations. The clothing we're talking about, again, looks just like work clothes, ordinary work clothes. When you get to your workstation, if you're in the furnace, you have to have an aluminized jacket on. And I frankly think those are one size fit all.
So the aluminized jacket is something you put on at your workstation, not when you're not in the locker room.
Absolutely, Your Honor, when you're on the clock. Now you're being paid. Yeah. So the specialized equipment, this is not specialized equipment. This is not Steiner, the Supreme Court type equipment, where the workers are on battery acid, et cetera, where they're putting on, as the unanimous decision of the Supreme Court noted, quite unusual items. And the Supreme Court made 2 terrific observations that bear in this case there. Ordinarily, it's right in the beginning of the opinion, putting your clothes on, taking your clothes off, and washing is, quote, preliminary and post-liminary. It's not principal activity. It's preliminary and post-liminary within the meaning of the Portal to Portal Act. Therefore, it can't start the workday. Therefore, the walking that occurs after putting your clothes on has not started the workday. Now, Justice Warren.
Are there any cases that deal with coal miners who have a long trip down an elevator to get to the seam?
There may be, Your Honor. I'm not familiar with them. But again, that's precisely the purpose of the Portal to Portal Act, that unions and employers can, for themselves, within the constraints of the Fair Labor Standards Act, determine the beginning and end of the workday. So the miner, if the miners want to, they can insist on being paid for that travel time. They cannot agree with the union, with the employer, and they'll have to be paid.
I just wondered whether they put on their, I shouldn't bother you with this, but I'm just curious whether they put on their protective gear before they take the elevator down to the seam.
And I just don't know, Your Honor.
Do you know if there's a differential in pay? In the military, you could call it combat pay. I mean, where you're really going into some high-skilled and maybe dangerous, more dangerous. Do they get paid more?
Well, I can only say, and what's in the record is that these are highly paid positions. These are lucrative jobs, all of them. The union is very much in favor of continuing the flexibility that the employer and the union have to pay for gang time or work time when you're at your workstation, so that, for example, we don't have to have clocks, time clocks at each workstation. So an employee has to get to his workstation and put a uniform, put clothes on at the workstation, but rather can go to his or her locker room, put their clothes on, make their way, and it organizes 4,000 or 5,000 workers in this facility, make their way on their terms, essentially on their terms, to their workplace. Yes, Your Honor.
The clothing that you speak of, how uniform is it, and is it mandated what it should be, these jackets and pants?
For the 4,000 or 5,000 folks, the jacket and the pants are uniform. They're the same.
By the company?
Provided by the company, and in large measure of the 5,000 folks, almost all of them have to wear that jacket and that pants. And again, it looks like one of those jackets you'd find at one of these outdoor stores. It is flame retardant. You don't have an option. In most cases, you have to put it on. You have to put the pants on. You can put it on over your clothes. You can take your clothes off and put it on over long johns if you want. You can pretty much do what you want. You have to leave it there at the end of the day, although not everybody does, because these things are rather useful outside the plant. There are a few jobs where you don't even have to wear that.
Well, would you equate it in part to tools that are provided?
Well, it's different than tools. It's different than tools in the sense, you're wearing it. This is wearing apparel. And it's different than the welder's mask and then the person in the oven's respirator. It's sure. Different than that.
What about the washing? Now, that's a requirement that they be washed?
Very few people are required. There's an OSHA requirement that those working in coke ovens before they leave the facility. So that's a few hundred people of the 4,000 or 5,000 by law must shower before they leave. Showers are made available to everyone. Some people do it, some people don't. But again, the union has agreed with the employer that the showering will be dealt with as the clothes. And 2030 covers putting clothes on, taking clothes off, and showering. The remaining issue that's before this court is the district court found that notwithstanding the exclusion of 2030 of the clothes changing and the showering, that nonetheless it's possible that the walking time could have been taken out of the protection given an employer that excludes travel time to your work site. So the basic protection of the Portal to Portal Act, it's really two basic protections, travel time to your work site from your locker room is excluded, and back to your locker room is excluded by statute. You don't need an agreement with the union. It's excluded by statute, as is the general category preliminary and post-preliminary activity, undefined what post-preliminary preliminary activity means. Many in the Congress in 1947 thought it meant putting clothes on and taking clothes off. Some weren't sure it meant that, and 2 years later in 49 said, let's make sure everybody understands preliminary and post-preliminary means putting clothes on and taking clothes off. Some in the Congress said, we already did that 2 years ago. Others said, let's do it again. So that's where 2030 came from, to define the second part of the Portal to Portal Act exclusions that say preliminary and post-preliminary activity is not compensable unless you've already started your workday. 2030 says, and by that we mean at least putting clothes on, taking clothes off, and washing if an employer and a union have agreed. They've defined in 2030, 2 years after the Portal to Portal Act, at least one subset of what's meant by preliminary and post-preliminary activity. And that is the nub of the case, and that is why 2030 activity cannot start or end the workday. Congress wanted to give employers and unions...
Well, what about the travel time?
That's my point, Your Honor. The travel time is fundamentally excluded under 254A1, the first basic provision of the Portal to Portal Act. So A1 excludes travel time unless...
I'm just talking about 2030. That's why I got...
All right. So 2030 excludes, if you agree...
Clothing
and washing. Portal to Portal Act excludes two categories, traveling to the work site from your locker room and traveling back, and secondly, the undefined bucket of activities called preliminary and post-preliminary activities. We would submit, and any care...
Where does this notion of the of principal activity come in?
Because under the Portal to Portal Act, travel time is not compensable until your first principal activity. So if you have gotten to your workstation, started work, and then your in-plant travel occurs, it's compensable. So, but if you haven't started work yet, you haven't engaged in a principal activity, then your travel to your work site is excluded. The other side's position is, by putting on required clothing, the workday has started.
When you start to put them on or when they're on?
Unclear. We know this. It's not compensable. So they're suggesting that there is a work activity that's not compensable, that the Supreme Court, in a sort of a passing way, Chief Justice Warren suggested, the employer and the union know how to make travel time, even where you have to put clothing on, non-compensable, use 2030. There's that passage in Steiner. What happened in Steiner, there was no 2030 agreement. So there was no agreement that said we're going to exclude clothing from compensability. They had to put they had to put this clothing on or they couldn't do their job. There's no 2030 agreement with the union that makes it not work. Supreme Court held unanimously it's work, and therefore the walking or travel that comes after that act of work is compensable. Our case is different. The district court said putting clothing on is not work. Why is it not work? Because the union and the employer have agreed it won't start the work day. And the other side's position is it doesn't have to be compensable work for it to start the work day. We would suggest that, and the Fourth Circuit does a great job of this in the Sepulveda case, of analyzing the relationship between these two statutes. The basic Portal to Portal Act was passed in 1947 that said walking to your workstation's not work, you're not going to be paid for it. Preliminary and post-preliminary activity is not work, you won't be paid for it unless those categories...
Getting back for a second to my initial question, is there some history or experience with companies that have been caught by the FLSA and then made wage adjustments after? Because
there's some in the.
What strikes me is, you know, that I don't see how the union could benefit or how the workers in the future could benefit from...
Well, it's been suggested, Your Honor.
Wouldn't there be some adjustment?
Much better off to leave these kinds of when the day starts and when the day ends issues to the unions and the employers rather than have, with all due respect, courts decide, you know, when should this work day start, when should it end. That was the very purpose of the Portal to Portal Act. Let the unions and the employers figure this out within the constraints of the statute. Let them figure out, in terms of clothing, is it going to start the workday or not? This employer and this union have said putting your clothing on is not going to start the workday, not just for purposes of paying you for the time putting the clothing on, but for purposes of paying you for getting to your workstation. They've had 60 years of this agreement. So what's the history when other employers? There's been a lot in the poultry and slaughterhouse business where they've had this litigation. Some employers have simply... change their practices. They said, you know what, we're going to put the time clock at your workstation. You're going to have to get to your workstation in time to to clock in and clock out. We'll pay you 20 minutes for putting your clothing on, and we won't give you a raise across the board. So it's a matter of economics, and it's a matter of allowing the workplace. And again, this only happens in a unionized workplace. 2030 only applies in a unionized workplace. So it's not as if the employees don't have a representative, don't have a voice, and the Congress authorized precisely what's happened here. So the district court simply went awry by looking at the wrong question, looking at the question whether or not putting clothes on and taking clothes off was integral and indispensable, i.e., was it a principal activity? What they needed to look at was, is it covered by a 2030 agreement? Because if it is, Congress says it's not a principal activity. It doesn't start the workday.
Has the union appeared in the case or taken a position?
They have not. You know, they're in the difficult position of representing the employees, and they're party to the agreement that allows us to engage in these pay practices. So they've stayed away, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr.
Very much.
Mr. DiNardo. Mr. Madoff? Madoff, sorry.
Good morning, Your Honors. Thank you, and may it please the Court. I'm Aaron Madoff, and I represent Clifton Sandifer and some 800 employees of U.S. Steel who are essentially paid by the shift. They get paid for an 8-hour shift.
So how much are they asking for?
It depends upon the time that we're talking about. The district court never allowed us to get to the discovery stage on that, so I can't tell you. They're asking for time and a half for hours worked over 40, and that's going to depend upon the people. These are people who have to be on the plant premises for much longer than 8 hours, some of them as much as 10 hours.
The reality of the case to me, explain to me what's wrong about that, is that the company isn't going to pay these people more for 40 hours a week work. So if clothing and walking is classified as work, so the employer, which does nothing for the employer, the employer only gets 35 hours of actual work. It's not going to pay the same hourly wage.
I think what we're talking about here, Your Honor, is the difference between the union agreement and the law. When Congress passed...
Why would the law be so stupid as to say, well, you have to do it this way, and of course... there's going to be an adjustment in the hourly rate, so workers aren't going to be any better off. And look, the Portal to Portal Act, when the Portal to Portal Act was passed, all the Supreme Court justices had been appointed by Roosevelt, and they were very liberal on economic matters. And in 1946, Republicans took control of Congress. And it's after that we get the Portal to Portal Act and, of course, the Taft-Hartley Act. And the history of the Portal to Portal Act is that it was to prevent these incredible windfalls that the Supreme Court had decreed by the way it defined the workday. And it seems that the Act makes very clear they can contract out of the company, the union, can contract out of it. They can have the work beginning when you really are starting working rather than when you're putting your clothes on or when you're walking.
Your Honor, I think you're conflating, as counsel has, Section 203 on the Portal to Portal Act. That's not what the Portal to Portal Act says at all. The Portal to Portal Act says that you don't get paid until your first principal activity. Alvarez versus IBP in 2005 says that we start the continuous workday.
You're responding to my question. I don't understand. If you define principal activity as clothing or whatever, if you say that the workday runs from when they start putting on their clothing to when they get back out of the building at the end of the day, then instead of working 8 hours, you're going to have them work, say, 8 and 9 hours. And with the overtime, of course. And so it's going to be a windfall, and current workers, as soon as the agreement is renegotiated, they're going to have a lower hourly pay.
Not at all, Your Honor, because it's not a windfall. It's work that they're doing. As a matter of law, we're talking about work.
Putting clothes on is not work.
These aren't clothes, but as a matter of law.
Of course they're clothes, and putting them on is no big deal. It's not like the aluminum the aluminum protector, the aluminized jacket, or trying to breathe through a respirator. Yeah, that's why I asked about the coal mining. It seems my guess is that you don't go down into the mine without being festooned with all sorts of protective gear. This is much less. But I don't think it matters, because even if there's a sense in which this should be work time, if it's defined that way and the employer ends up having to pay overtime for work that's not is not considered productive for it, then just pay less in the next...
Your Honor, OSHA does consider work productive for the employer.
Wages are determined. Wages of steel workers nowadays are determined by international economic forces. A lot of importation of steel. The steel industry in the United States almost went down the drain some years ago. So these people aren't going to benefit from this.
I would disagree, Your Honor. What we have is a situation where the union and it...
steel companies end up paying a larger labor bill just because the work time starts from clothing rather than from when you start working.
The labor bill they should
pay...
The labor bill they should...
The economics of the steel industry permit that.
The labor bill they should pay is for the work that's done.
Can you answer my question? How does the economics of the steel industry permit higher wages on the basis of a reclassification of when the work
It's not a reclassification.
Starts.
Again, it's a matter of law.
You
These
don't
people
answer
are working.
Any of my questions. I'm asking you an economic question. Look, the Steelworkers Union is a famous union, powerful union, and an honest union. So presumably really negotiates on behalf of the workers. And whatever these wages these people are getting, this is the market-determined wage. And it's not going to be higher just because a court says that the workday starts earlier. What it's going to mean is that since the company will be getting fewer productive hours in the workday, they'll pay a lower hourly wage, and nothing will have changed except for the people who had the windfall because they left before their suit.
I can't answer it in that way, Your Honor, because what you're talking about here is something that the law regards as work, that the people are doing.
That's the question. The law is hardly transparent. As I say, the whole idea of the Portal of Portal Act was to prevent the judges from greatly expanding retroactive liability, windfall liability for companies.
But this isn't about the Portal to Portal Act.
The workplace.
Portal to Portal Act addresses up to the first principal activity. What counsel has asked you to do.
The first principal activity is when they're working, not when they're putting
the question
their
that the district
on.
Court has said that this may be an integral and indispensable activity. The Supreme Court in Alvarez defined principal activity as something which is integral and indispensable.
Well,
the district court.
That's ridiculous, because by that token, commuting is the principal activity. So they don't get to the factory, they're not going to work. You're going to add commuting? That's another concept of. That's portal to portal with a vengeance.
I guess we could say that the Supreme Court was wrong in Alvarez, which certainly would change the argument, but the Supreme Court has defined it.
Is an argument for commuting as being a principal activity?
Not at all. I don't
Why
think
not?
It's integral and indispensable.
Putting your clothes on.
Because commuting is something you and I do when we go to work every day. It's how we get to work. It's getting to work. It is not working. The clothes
well,
is different
the
because the employer requires it.
The work starts when they get to the part of the factory where they're doing work, you know, where they're shoveling coke or whatever they do. That's when the work starts. Now, if you want to say, well, work starts when I have breakfast, because I don't have breakfast, I can't work, or right?
You're going down the slippery slope of making the decision for the district court of what is integral and indispensable. This is issues that have not been presented. The district court denied summary judgment and said that's an issue before it.
No, that's why I think the logic, I mean, I think the next case, you win this case, next case will be about commuting.
It can't, because the Portal to Portal Act specifically talks about commuting. It talks about walking. That is preliminary and post-preliminary. That is not a principal activity. 2030, if you read it, it says for purposes of 206 and 207, this is not compensable time. But 2030 is meaningless if the Portal to Portal Act talks about principal activity. Once you decide that it is not a principal activity...
You're saying for the last... For the last 65 years, the Portal to Portal Act hasn't been enforced? It's been meaningless?
No. I'm saying that if it's read the way you're reading it, 2030 is meaningless, because you don't get to 2030 unless you have something which is, in fact, a principal activity. If it's not a principal activity, under the Portal to Portal Act, you don't get paid for it.
Why should we be deciding what's a principal activity? Look in the Fourth Circuit versus the Ninth Circuit.
Because
it seems you're actually imposing something on the union here.
Not at all. I'm simply saying that the Supreme Court in Alvarez versus IBP has defined for us what is a principal activity, and what the court's job to do in any case, as in this case, is to take the facts of the case and apply the law. The law provided by the Supreme Court in Alvarez versus IBP is that if it is an integral, an indispensable activity to the work, it is a principal activity.
Who decides that?
The court is going to have to decide.
Well, yeah, but it seems to me the people who work there know what a principal activity is. Now, don't we have three shifts?
Sure.
8 hours each?
I believe that's the case.
Well, it'd have to be, I assume, but something like that. And as Judge Posner's pointing out, what you're suggesting might be 9-hour shifts.
Only because they have to do...
And you got two overlaps.
Only because they have to put on this clothes, which we believe is integral and indispensable. But if we go the way you're suggesting, Your Honors, and we say that the unions and the management should decide what is integral and what is indispensable, what is a principal activity, we could say that not only getting down to the floor, picking up the shovel, that's not integral and indispensable. The unions and management get to decide it. We could take the entire FLSA out altogether, because there's this... The slope you're creating is the unions and the management decide. Do they decide it's work? We could get to the point where people aren't being paid at all because, well, they're not.
I don't see how one could argue that if your job is to shovel coke into a coke oven, that's not a principal activity.
They can't argue to you, Judge.
But the clothing thing is obviously not that.
They can't argue it to you, Judge, but the way you're asking us to do this is to say leave it to the union and management. You don't get to make that choice, not what you presented to us. And they can argue to the union or the management. They can make the decision, and what you think is principal activity or not, the way you're suggesting, is irrelevant. The courts don't get to decide if you're going to say that management does, and if they want to decide that shoveling coke doesn't count until the coke actually goes into the furnace.
Certainly germane. And they have the primary interest here. I don't know why we shouldn't give way to their conception.
Because the law doesn't permit it, Your Honor.
But in any event, I don't understand why you think putting on... What if you're working for a grocery store and they say, oh, you have to put on an apron when you arrive?
An apron is not the bionic fiber that we're talking about here. It's not. The apron is not the bionic fiber that we're talking about here.
Is that the distinction, bionic fibers?
It's protective equipment. If you read the definition that we believe is applicable of clothes, it is garments worn for protection or decency.
You get that definition.
Webster's Second Dictionary, the definition that was in force at the time that the law was passed.
And did Congress consult the dictionary when it drafted the statute?
Answer
my question.
I can't tell you what Congress did or didn't do. I can only tell you that the courts have said they have.
Paid attention to Webster's Second Dictionary.
It seems to me in addressing this primary duty, we can put the apron aside, maybe. But we don't have an undersea diver here, do we? I mean, that, I think we all could agree, couldn't we, that if you were required to put on the, what appears to me to be substantial equipment to be a diver.
If you're talking about the air tank, yes. If you're talking I would say the wetsuit and the undersea diver is more like clothes, which you have here. I looked at the clothes. I put them on. They're heavy.
I think Judge Flom said a deep sea diver. You know, a deep sea diver.
You know, I'm talking about the substantial helmet and the suit that weighs. You could agree that that, or I guess you certainly would, that that would be pretty integral to carrying out the function. That's not ordinary clothing.
I would say that that's not a decision for this court to make. I would say that's a decision for the district court to make. It hasn't reached that issue. It denied summary judgment because there is what's before this court is the legal question. If it is integral and indispensable, the district court's already decided that for summary judgment purposes, it needs evidence. If it is integral and indispensable, the question now is, does the continuous workday start as found by Steiner and by Alvarez, or is this court going to say, no, it doesn't start, we're going to ignore Steiner and Alvarez, and because it's 2030 activity, we're now going to redefine the Portal to Portal Act, when in fact 2030 is very, very clear. It doesn't address the Portal to Portal Act. It doesn't address what is a principal activity. It doesn't address what starts the workday. It addresses what is compensable. It starts out for purposes of 206 and 207.
But that leaves to the paradox that you have a principal activity that is not compensable. People are working and engaged in principal activity and not get paid for it.
That's exactly what 2030 is for, because if you say, Judge...
Does that make any sense?
It makes absolute sense, because if it doesn't...
Well, why would you want to define as principal... Why would you want to include in principal activity non-compensable time?
Congress made that decision.
People are supposed to be paid for their principal activities, aren't they?
No, that's the whole point.
Why did Congress make this crazy decision?
I won't agree that it's crazy. I can't tell you why.
All right,
I can tell you how
it's crazy. Give me some rationale for it.
Sure. The Portal to Portal Act, Section 254, talks about the principal activity. That starts the workday. Now, you would agree with me, Your Honor, that if it is not a principal activity, you don't get paid for it. Would you agree?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, under the Portal to Portal Act, if it is not a principal activity, you're not getting paid for it. Once we get to the Portal to Portal Act and it is a principal activity, at this point you have an activity which you're getting paid for. But you have 2030. 2030 now says this is a principal activity for which you're not going to get paid. If we went the other way.
What is the logic of that?
Because if it is not a principal activity.
No, wait a second. It is. Why do they want to create a category of principal activities which are not non-compensable?
They didn't. They left that a question to the union and the management to decide whether they're going to compensate.
Okay, why did they, since they don't leave to the decision to, you don't leave to management and labor the decision whether to pay people anything or pay them overtime, why would they have decided to create this category that was not compensable as a matter of law? Everything is left, obviously, you can pay people for anything you want. But why would they do that? Why would they want to exempt this from compulsory compensation?
This is actually stuff that is compensable as a matter of law. This is material. This is work that is a principal activity under the Portal to Portal Act, and now under 2030, because the Portal to Portal Act would allow it to be compensated, they can opt out of compensating it. They can negotiate that.
Why? I know, but my question is, why would you allow the union and the company to opt out of a principal activity and say, we recognize a principal activity, but you're not going to be paid for it? What's the thinking behind that? It sounds paradoxical.
I can't tell you what was in somebody's head 40 years ago. I can tell you what the law says. I can speculate, Your Honor.
I'm asking you, law is purposive. It's rarely crazy. If you have a legal provision that seems to be irrational, you want to examine very carefully to see whether you're understanding it correctly. So this seems to be irrational on your interpretation. So I was asking you whether maybe there is a rational interpretation.
The time it takes to put on clothes, the time it takes to shower, to wash, can take time that is not controlled by the company. They can sit in the shower and say, rubber ducky, You're the one, you make bath time lots of fun, and you end up with non-controlled time that the company is going to have to pay for. The company
that's
and the union...
That's true with walking. You can walk directly, you can walk slowly, you can walk quickly.
But Congress didn't create an opportunity to opt out of walking. They didn't make that decision. The
well,
walking time...
That's called a principal activity.
I'm sorry?
Call it a principal activity.
No, the Portal to the Portal Act is very clear that walking is not a principal activity. If we read the words of the Portal Act, walking...
That's not true. If we say that putting on the clothes is a principal activity, does it follow that then walking for 5 or 10 minutes or whatever it takes, is that going to be part of that principal activity?
Not part of the principal activity.
What
part
is it
of the
called?
Part of the continuous workday under the Supreme Court's decision in Alvarez versus IBP.
Is that automatically part of the... workday then if you say putting on clothes is a principal activity?
Unless it is part of a bona fide lunch period, which is not an issue.
I'm talking about in the morning we show up.
That's right. It is. And the district court in this case has made a finding, which is not an issue here, that there is enough evidence to make a determination, that it has to make a determination at trial.
So this is the key issue then. If we say it's a principal activity for putting on the clothes, then it's going to be travel to the workplace under some other provision, but it's going to be compensable.
Under the Portal to Portal Act.
There's
That's
no
right.
way around that. That's why this decision is pivotal, I guess.
What if the walking comes first and then the clothing?
Then under the Portal to Portal Act, it is not compensable. That's why these people may be on premise for much as 10 hours, but they're not going to get paid for all of it. You get paid for the continuous workday under the Supreme Court's opinion in Alvarez.
But if they shift their clothing to the coke ovens and so on, then we come out with a different result.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. Could you repeat the question? I missed some words.
Suppose that now you get dressed and then you walk to your place of work. What if they reverse it and you walk first and then you put on the clothing at your place of work?
Then. I mean, presumably you could stand in a coke plant and be
just
putting the stuff on.
Answer the question, would you please? It's perfectly simple. You walk first, then you put on the clothes at the work site, rather than clothes first and then walking.
Then putting on the clothes is that first principal activity?
Look, just answer my question, would you please? Does that affect your case in any way if the company were to redo its...
It does not affect the legal... It does not affect the legal reasoning at all. It will affect what time is compensable.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It will affect their pay. Right? They won't be compensated in that event. Is that correct?
They will be...
Yes or no?
If we find that...
Yes or no? I don't want the ifs.
It depends upon whether or not it's 203O activity, Your Honor.
I just told... Look... Suppose you're right about the clothing being a principal activity. Now suppose they move the locker room to its immediately adjacent to the work site. And now you're walking, you walk to the locker room, put on your clothes, go to work, rather than putting on your clothes and walking and going to work. My question is, if the company does it the second way instead of the first, does that affect your claim? Would that affect your claim?
No, these employees would still be entitled to more pay.
Would it be identical?
No, it would not be identical.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Mr. Madoff.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Ms. Patel?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Seema Patel for the Secretary of Labor. To determine whether an activity is principal, we look exclusively to one test.
Now, what is it you think you're doing for workers by taking this position?
We are simply seeking to enforce what the law says.
Now, come on now. You're a political branch. What is it? How are workers helped by the... position you're advocating?
Well, the position we're advocating, which is simply the reading of the statutory text,
I know,
says
you're
that
not
workers...
answering my question. How does this make workers, how does your position make workers better off?
It makes workers better off because it entitles them to all the pay they are entitled to under the FLSA.
No, but we know there's going to be an adjustment. They're going to get the same pay in the long run because that pay is set by market forces. Don't you understand that?
I understand that.
And is it wrong or right?
I don't know the answer to whether it is wrong or right.
You ought to know, because how can the Labor Department intervene in these cases without knowing what it does for workers?
Well, in this case, we do know what it does for the workers.
No, we don't know. We know that there are windfalls for former workers. We know that. We don't know what the... I think I know, but I don't think you even have an opinion as to what it would do for current workers.
I think that for current workers, what it would do is entitle them to pay for every principal activity.
No, it won't, because U.S. Steel is not going to pay these people more, as the union well recognizes, which negotiated this deal. It's not going to. The economy, the steel industry, the conditions of competition in the steel industry will not permit that. If the work day expands to 45 hours or something, because it includes clothing and walking, they're not going to pay 5 hours of overtime for preparatory stuff that confers no benefit on the production process. They're going to pay a lower hourly wage. So just back where we are now. Isn't that true? And tell me why that's not true, if you don't think it's true.
Well, first, Your Honor, my client is the Department of Labor, so I cannot speak to what U.S. Steel will or will not do.
That's a known sequitur. The Department of Labor is supposed to know what determines wages.
That's right? Correct.
The Department of Labor is trying to help workers. You tell me how this helps workers.
This helps workers because it ensures payment for all hours worked.
Do they get paid more?
I'm sorry?
The worker's going to get paid more?
I don't know if they're going to get paid more. I know that adopting the interpretation, we are proposing of the statute that the workers will get paid.
You're saying they're not getting paid enough right now.
I'm not speaking to whether or not they're getting paid enough.
You have to assume something here.
Well, the assumption
you're not doing this you're not going to just stretch it out. They make $500 a day no matter what, because that's what you have to pay in order to have a steel price. So if it's going to stretch it out, okay, they're going to work 9 hours. So you figure in an overtime rate, you figure out the daily rate, comes out to $500, but they get a little less per hour. If that follows. If it doesn't, then you're saying they're going to get paid more.
Well, I suppose that is one scenario that could result from this decision, that they could get paid more. I suppose another result...
Get paid more? No, they can't get paid more. They're paid what the economy, what the industry, what market forces determine their worth. They don't get paid more. It's not like a minimum wage. A minimum wage, people are paid more. There's less employment. But the people who survive are paid more. But these people are not minimum wage workers. So when this contract is renegotiated, they're going to be, if you prevail, they're going to be paid less.
Well,
they're being paid what the union has been able to get for them. And changing this, definition of when the workday starts and ends, that doesn't have any effect on the relative bargaining power of the union employer. It's silly for the Labor Department to be involved in this case.
Well, Your Honor, the FLSA cannot be bargained away, and that is axiomatic.
The question is one of interpretation. It's, at best, you could say it's a toss-up. You certainly can't say that you have a clear case. Right? You just have an argument. You have a lawyer's argument. suppose it's just as good as the defendant's argument, says U.S. Steel's argument. Fine. Whichever way it's resolved is not going to be giving the FLSA away.
Well, we believe that reading it the way the defendants do really expands the interpretation far beyond the parameters of both 3.0 and 254. So,
is this because your research in dictionaries has told you what the limits of clothing are?
No, Your Honor, this has nothing to do with that. This strictly is because Section 3.0 and Section 254 have language in them.
One of these paradoxes that if they walk first and clothe second, they get paid less. Now, doesn't that challenge your interpretation? We try not to interpret statutes to produce absurd results. Isn't that an absurd result?
No, Your Honor. I think the absurd result comes if you look at it the way the defendants are looking at it, which is to say that 3.0 somehow, somewhere in the statute, enables a reading of 254 that's just not there.
Your co-lawyer agreed. Don't you agree that if they walk first and close second, they get paid less?
I suppose, Your Honor, because the principle...
Is that not an absurd consequence?
I don't
think... What's the rationality of such a... We're going to see companies all over the United States moving their locker rooms, and that is what? That's good? That helps workers?
Well, Your Honor... Our view is that...
It's sensible. It's an inevitable implication of the statute, even though it's preposterous.
I don't think it's preposterous.
Of course it's preposterous. Why should they be paid differently depending on whether they walk first and close second, or close second and walk, or close first and walk second? Tell me what sense that could possibly make.
Well, Your Honor, they are paid for the first principal activity.
Tell me what sense it could possibly make.
The sense it makes is that it comports with the Portal Act.
That is not sense. I'm saying your interpretation is absurd, and I want you to give me some reason to think it's not absurd. It wouldn't be an absurd interpretation. It would have, intelligible consequences in the workplace.
The reason it's not absurd is because Section 3.0 narrowly limits and leaves.
You're saying there's no absurdity doctrine in statutory interpretation, because once you've made the interpretation, its consequences, however absurd, are irrelevant. That's what you're saying. Right?
No, Your Honor, I do not believe that our interpretation leads to any logical absurdity.
Well, it's much different than it has been for a long time, right?
What is,
Isn't this a change in position from the Department of Labor?
Well, Your Honor, in 2007, the Department of Labor did opine on this matter at the end of its opinion letter, but did also recognize that were the case law to develop and were the landscape of this area of law to develop, that the DOL would monitor those developments. And in issuing the 2010 AI, as Your Honors will see, the department did, in fact, engage in a deeper statutory analysis, a thorough look at the...
This is just an election change. Really, nothing to do with anything.
Ms. Patel, would you say that the Secretary's decision doesn't reflect any economic analysis? Is that your position, that you just read this statute and economic analysis is set aside?
That is correct, Your Honor. The interpretation...
So the Secretary entered this fray not reflecting on those, because that wouldn't be under the purview of the Secretary.
In issuing the 2010 AI and coming to this interpretation on 3.0 and 254, no, the Secretary did not undertake any economic analysis. She simply looked at the statute.
So there'd be no reason for us to provide any deference to the Secretary's interpretation?
The Secretary would disagree, and the Secretary...
It's not predicated on any study or anything. Expertise. It's just a lawyer's opinion.
Well, Your Honor, under Skidmore, the Secretary does request deference to the opinion letter because it is an opinion on an ambiguous area of the law.
Does the opinion letter explain what kind of study, investigation, institutional expertise or any other source that would invite deference?
The opinion letter does, in fact, do a thorough look and analysis of the legislative history.
That's what any lawyer could do, right? There's nothing about, it's not the Department of Labor coming forward and saying, look, you know, we know a great deal about labor markets. We study labor markets. And we think that this interpretation is sensible. It'll promote, it'll make workers better off. It'll reduce tensions in labor relations. It'll improve worker safety. Whatever you want to say, any of that would be highly germane to a court and would earn deference. But just having a lawyer write a brief in support of the department's current position, which maybe after the next election will go back to 2007, who knows? Anyway, thank you very much.
Thank you.
So, Mr. DiNardo, I think your time is right. If you have, you can have a minute if you have something. Well, thank you very much to all three lawyers.